Hi there, church family. It's good to be with you today as we look at the sermon from this past Sunday and discuss it amongst us as pastors. So hopefully we'll be able to do that for you. We are back into Genesis. Easter is over, going back to the series that started a long time ago, but then I got sick, so we didn't get to keep going through it, but trying to get back to it, looking at the life of Joseph. And so we see this in Genesis 37, all the way through the end of Genesis. Our focus this past Sunday, though, was just on Genesis 37. We need to remember with Joseph, his family tree, which is important, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, which is really the big three. These are like the forefathers of Israel. Jacob's name is changed to Israel, actually, which is one of the things it says in chapter 37 that we read. But we took chapter 37 and read it all. It's long. I don't want to read it this morning for you. But in 37, we have a few things happen that are important. It starts by saying, and this is the family of Jacob. And then it just talks about Joseph, which is interesting, an interesting thing. Joseph tells on his brothers that he gives a bad report about his brothers. We learn that he is the favorite of his father. He's given a coat or a robe of colors, it says. His brothers do not like him at all, especially after that. He then has a couple dreams. One of the dreams is sheaves, and they're bowing down to him, to his sheaf. This represents his brothers bowing down to him. Then he has another dream with the sun, the moon, and the stars. Everybody bowing down to him. This angered not only the brothers, but also his father. But it says his father did think about this and remembered this in his heart. Move on then, where Jacob asked Joseph to go find his brothers in Shechem. They're out with the flock in Shechem. See how they're doing and to bring a report to him. So Joseph leaves. He does that. They're not in Shechem. They're in Dothan. A guy tells him, hey, they're over in Dothan. So he goes to Dothan. When they see him coming, and the brothers see Joseph coming from a far ways off, they have a plan to kill him. This is how much they hated him. They wanted to get him out of their lives. They end up throwing him in a pit. Reuben kind of changes their mind to do that. Reuben had the intentions of then going back and getting Joseph and saving him. They throw him into a pit after they take his robe from him, and they end up selling him. They end up selling him to the Midianites, who are coming by for 20 shekels of silver. And then they go home and they tell their father that, it's kind of an interesting, I didn't talk too much about it, but they take the coat, they dip it in blood, and some of the commentators were saying it was pointed that they didn't say, is this our brother's coat? They say, is this your son's coat? Knowing it was, but just showing how removed they were from Joseph. They didn't want to have anything to do with them. And Jacob says, yes, he's been devoured by an animal. Jacob mourns the death and says he's going to mourn the death until he dies as well. And then at the very end, we see that the Midianites sell Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, who is captain of the guard for Pharaoh in Egypt. So a lot of stuff happens there in Genesis 37. So how do we want to do this today? What do you guys have any ideas on how we should tackle this? I don't just want to reiterate my sermon, because in the sermon I just kind of went through the narrative, walked through it. And whenever I do that, preach narrative, I do try the best I can. I'm sure I'm not very good at it, but I want to bring people into the story, right? I want us to try our best to feel the story. And so I try to, do a little longer and say things like, can you imagine how that would feel? Can you imagine this situation? You know, what was going on during this time? Like an example would be when Joseph tells the dream. Why did he do that? What was the situation that was going on? Was he being smug about it, or was he just having a conversation like, man, I had this dream last night. Listen to what it is. I don't know, but I think it's good to think about that stuff, but we can't put too much into that stuff because we're not given it, Right? Someone was telling us after, I don't know if all of us were together, but like VeggieTales does this.
Yeah, it was Emma and
yeah. What'd she say? She said
they're like, yeah, Joseph, or he's a little punk kid.
Yeah.
In the Joseph one.
In VeggieTales, right? Yeah. He's like, hey, I had this dream type of thing, and so nobody likes Joseph.
Right. Right, because you said something about him being an outcast, or I forget what it was. And they're like, I never thought of Joseph that way before, or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's like being the one who's being, he's being picked on, and like,
yeah.
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 But, and that's what it seems like, because again, when we look at it from chapter 37 here, we don't have anything bad said about Joseph. There's no indication.
There's not really anything bad said about Joseph in the entire Joseph narrative.
Right, and so he's set as this figure that does good, as opposed to like his dad. When we look at Jacob, there's all kinds of bad stuff talked about.
The one thing we do have is Jacob rebukes Joseph for his dreams one time.
Yeah.
Because he does say, well, Joseph, like he, it's kind of like, he kind of like cautions, he's like, it says, his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall I and your mother and your brothers indeed come to bow ourselves to the ground before you? And so there could be hints of that, that either, I mean, on the one hand, we're told, though, that Joseph, that Jacob kept the saying in mind. But on the other hand, perhaps there's a hint there that we could say, I think we could say at the very least, potentially, it may have been unwise of him to share all of this with people that you know already.
Yeah, because the other thing we don't have here, like with Abraham, Abraham is told Isaac
right.
is the one.
Right.
Isaac is told... Right, that Jacob's the one. That's pre-told ahead of time, the younger.
Yeah.
Right? And so the parents knew this. We don't have that, though, with Joseph. We don't have an account where...
It just seems like he's just being made that.
Yeah, like his dad is just making him that. But yet, now with the dreams, we do have verification from the Lord.
That's interesting to think about because it's not even through Joseph that the promised seed continues, right? That doesn't even happen through Joseph. He's trying to make it happen
the
way he wants it to happen, but it doesn't in the end.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, correct.
Yep. And so we, like I said, I think it's good to put ourselves in the story to try to think of it. Whenever we read the... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that you drew that out well, that what we were talking about, that tension between... Is Joseph kind of like this smug kid who just likes rubbing all of his whatever he's got in people's faces, you know, and making himself look good? Or is this just he's actually the outcast? He's the one being picked on, you know, in the family. Like he can't help what his dad is treating him like. And I think that was one of the things I was thinking of as you were going through that section is that's actually exactly how we. Well, you pointed out later on that that's how people treated Christ. He had done nothing wrong, but it's every right thing he did, people just hated him even more. And that even happens today, like you pointed out, like the kid in class who raises the hand, asks the question, or answers the question. Those are the kids, like everybody kind of has this feeling about...
That was a little personal, I noticed. Tim kind of got passionate about that statement about the kid who asked the questions and we're all ready to go.
No, he does. But I think you did a good job, and you said at the very end of that... But that kid, they did what they were supposed to do.
Yeah.
Tim says that from the pulpit right now, but later on he'll say that afterwards.
That's fine. That's fine. But like the exact same principle that we see in Joseph in this narrative, what we see happen to Christ, I think we see that play out all the time in our own lives. It's like when you see people acting righteous or like, you know, when sinners see people acting righteously around them, they just hate it. They hate it. They don't want anything to do with it, you know, and they want to throw those people under the bus. They want to get rid of them. They want to find anything bad they can say about them. It's like, well, that person's doing something right. Let's just find some way to slander them for what they're doing. I think we see that all the time.
Absolutely.
And that's how I tend to think about what's happening to Joseph in this narrative.
Yeah.
And the reason why we do that, the reason why the brothers do that is because they feel insecure because they want the father's love that Joseph has. And so that's, on the one hand, we understand they're wrong because we're told explicitly multiple times they hated him. On the other hand, they want the father's love, and that's why they think that, and that's always what we think. We think that by destroying that person, we will get the Father's love, whether it's Jacob or whoever. We will get what we want or what we think we need by eliminating that person, but we will realize that it doesn't ever satisfy that. Mm-hmm. And so they are, not only are they, they are both, like, as in so many cases, these brothers are both sinners and at the same time, I don't want to use this word too much, but they're victims of their father's favoritism too.
We're just very,
doesn't excuse their sin, but it does make, it helps explain what's going on here.
Mm-hmm. We're just so far removed from what life was like then. Like, there was a pecking order based on when you were born.
Right.
This was understood. The oldest would get like half, I think, if I remember right. And then the rest of the kids split the rest.
That's the way it's going to be in my family.
It is? Well, yeah.
I don't know if you are you doing that. Jackson gets half and then.
Sure, it's not much of a half.
Half the pool.
But they were being, like you said, I know you said you didn't want to use the word victimized, but it was like their argument would have been, this isn't the norm. This isn't fair. Yeah, this isn't how it's supposed to play out.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And by all accounts, again, we don't have this. They did do the work that they were called to do. They were out pasturing the flock, right? Yep. They were doing all this stuff. So it's not that they were bad kids.
But weren't they like multiple times like caught doing things they weren't supposed to do?
Yeah, Reuben slept with his father's
and
mistress.
Well,
I
thought that one of the things was that they had taken the flock to a place they weren't supposed to go, or they weren't.
It doesn't say that. It just says that they
had moved on.
So again, I don't know why they moved on. Maybe the sheep didn't have enough in Shechem, so they had to go. But yeah, they just moved on.
Yeah, you're right though, because the sons of Jacob have already shown themselves. Reuben's sleeping with one of his father's co-wives. Mm-hmm. So he's the oldest, and then Levi and Simeon have also already executed a mass genocide of the city of, is it Shechem? Whenever Dinah, their sister, is defiled, Jacob is just trying to play it cool. Even though something horrible's happened.
They're in Shechem.
And so Levi.
Maybe that's why they moved on.
Yeah, that could be right. Yeah. They cut their ties. So
I think what I was thinking of is in chapter 37, verse 2, whenever it says Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know what that report was? Like what that's connected to at all?
No.
It's just. That's probably a big source of their animosity towards
him. It's typical things, right? Again, right? We notice what's going on here. Joseph he's 17 years old, so it's not like he's a little toddler here.
No, yeah.
So what's happening is...
He would have been considered a man.
Right, yeah. So what's happening is he gets to stay back home with his robe with dad. While the other brothers are all out working all day long.
No, it says that he was pasturing the flock with his brothers.
But
he means later on, when he sends Joseph, hey, go check on your brothers.
I think that could also be you just think about the normal family dynamics. If you're Reuben and you're Judah and you're already, you know, your dad prefers the baby over everybody else. And then he's showing it by giving a robe to him. And then on top of that, he shows up and says, yeah, by the way, the brothers were not doing good. Like, it's totally understandable. There doesn't excuse it, but it's totally understandable that they're thinking, we're putting all this blood, sweat, and tears into all this stuff, and it looks like you're just going to give it all to him,
mm-hmm.
right? But where's our inheritance? So he's built Jacob, and a lot of this then goes back to just Jacob's family. It's really, in many ways, part of his raising of these sons. He's made an insecure environment for these kids to where the brothers are not sure of love, and when we're insecure, we turn to things to try to solve that problem. And for them, their solution was to just get rid of Jacob or to get rid of Joseph. Mm-hmm. And we've learned before, if you follow chapter 34, right, these guys are willing to take action, even whenever it comes to executing a whole city.
Yeah.
They have no problem taking a sword and killing people.
My friend's birthday. I forgot. I've texted him real quick.
You're a good friend.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody else did it first, and I'm like, oh, yeah. So not that good.
My wife does that to me all the time.
She texts you and say, hey, so-and-so's birthday. Make sure you text them.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
She's a good wife. She tells me what to do.
That is good. Yeah. So we talk about the favoritism, and I did say that that was a little side note. I don't think that's necessarily the point of this passage, but something that we can see is the destructiveness of that in a family. It's probably not wise for parents to just say, hey, you're my favorite. But that does creep into families all the time. Like I said, if you have multiple kids, it happens. Grandkids, it happens. And it's just something I think that we do need to look out for a little bit.
It is the total background for this story.
It is.
Because then it makes sense, too. We'll see the same thing again play out with Benjamin. Because what does he do? He keeps back Benjamin then. Mm-hmm. He lets all the other boys go to Egypt, but Benjamin can't go. Mm-hmm. So there's a continual reserving of the children of Rachel in a prideful place, a place of pride. Mm-hmm. And we understand that. So also that marriage that already has its roots in his preference for Rachel over Leah, and Leah feels hated and less preferred than because of Rachel. You see all the roots of that are still bearing fruit in their children.
Yeah.
There's still this rivalry, but the rivalry that began between the mothers is continuing on in the sons.
Yeah. No, that was a good point, a convicting point too, that, you know, you made, Tim, and in Ephesians 6, verse 4, it says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. And that's really like one of the easiest ways that parents can do that to their kids, to provoke them to anger, is to always point out to one child the way that the other child's acting. Like, this is how you should be more like this person. Or, you know, you don't even have to be that explicit. It could just be giving them gifts, spending time with them, just having a better relationship with them, you know, and it's easy to do.
Yeah. And it's hard. And I think on the flip side of that, as children or as grandchildren, we have to be careful of throwing that upwards to our parents or to our grandparents saying you're fit, because there's a lot of factors that go into play too in life. You know, you guys probably see this with your kids. I know your guys' kids are still pretty young, but there are going to be some of your kids who find hobbies that are similar to your hobbies, right? And so this is what you've always done, and now this one child likes to do that too, and so you guys do that together, but you have another child who just has no interest in that. And so as they get older, you know, if your kids are in their 20s and dad's out golfing with the one kid quite often because they both like to golf, but the other child doesn't really like to golf, it's not necessarily a favorites thing. Mm-hmm. It's just this is a hobby we have. And so then parents obviously need to work through that as well with their children. But that's just how it goes. And then, honestly, sometimes we have kids who are very well behaved, and we have others who are not, mm-hmm. right? And so then they think, yeah, you're just always picking on me. And it's like, no, you're just
bad all the time. yeah. No, I think another way it shows up, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but for me personally, whenever I see a bad character trait being established in one of my kids that honestly I know I struggle with, that I have myself, you know, and you kind of see yourself in your kid and you want to try to save them from, you know, some of the pain that might come from that later. It's like, I usually go a little harder on that than I do other things. And that could be seen as that kind of favoritism or just unfair treatment. And I have to be mindful of that. And it's not because necessarily of them, it's because of me, you know, and I know, like, I have that problem, and I don't want you to have that same problem, but I'm not God, you know, I can't fix them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you got to remember that.
So the big part of this story is Joseph goes and finds his brothers, they see him, and we really see the hatred, we really see the sin of these brothers here at this moment. It's 10 of them. So
there's 11 total, but yeah, 10 and Joseph.
What's that? Go ahead, talk again.
There's 10 brothers plus Joseph, right?
And at this point, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. 11.
Yeah, yeah. But 10 who are plotting.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. And they want to kill him. And then Reuben convinces them otherwise, and it says that Reuben kind of has a plan. Let's throw him in the pit. It seems as if Reuben leaves or something.
Yeah.
Something happens because Reuben doesn't seem to be there when they throw him in the pit and sell him.
Yeah, one of the apocryphal notes about this says that this is when he discovered corned beef. Reuben, the Reuben sandwich.
I'm like, so where is he going?
That's in the Jewish apocryphal writings, but we
yeah,
don't
like corned beef.
We don't know. And behold, the rye bread appeared and the cabbage.
That is the funniest joke that you've said in a long time.
but that's not in scripture, so we don't want to go too far onto that.
Okay.
So go ahead.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
I do like a good Reuben.
Me too.
Yep.
There's a pizza place that I was told about. Oh, you might know what it is, but they have like a lot of really weird flavored pizzas. They've got a Reuben pizza.
Ooh, sounds great.
They said like a French onion soup flavored pizza. It starts with an A or something. I need to ask him about it. I'll text him and ask him what it is. Keep going.
Yeah, so they're out there. They're plotting to kill Joseph, right? And Reuben, yes. Reuben's hoping that by restoring his brother to, so there's a lot of plotting here, right? Reuben's hoping that he can get back into the leadership position of the family, by restoring baby brother and saying, "Look, Dad, I've changed. I'm not sleeping with one of your wives anymore."
Well, that's one option. That is one option, because it doesn't really say specifically that that's what was happening and taking place. The other option, which I found very compelling as I was reading this in one of the commentaries, because I do think this is real. I think this is real, is we look at Reuben and we say he would sleep with one of his father's concubines. He's a miserable wretch. So of course he would want to kill, you know, or whatever, or he's plotting to just try to get back in. Or maybe he just didn't want to kill his brother. You know what I mean? Maybe he did care about his dad. Because we know that to be true about humans. You can do some really bad things.
Sure.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that you are a quote-unquote bad person in the eyes of humanity. Right? There's people who've made silly mistakes out of rage, out of whatever it might be. Or we would think very poorly, I think, of somebody who goes out and parties, they get drunk, they drive home, they get in an accident, and they kill people, right? We would say, that's a heinous thing you did. We'd be very upset at them. But I think we would also know they made that was a dumb decision.
Sure.
And it doesn't mean they're a bad person. They could be very sad for what they did. It's probably going to ruin their life, honestly. Mm-hmm. But maybe there's still a lot of good, and maybe that's like the case with Reuben. He had a bad night. I know it sounds horrible to say it that way. You know what I mean? But like, you know what I mean? And yeah. So maybe
the one thing is too. Then how do you? Yeah, because you think about whenever he comes back to the pit, mm-hmm. and he says, "The boy is gone, and where shall I go?"
Yeah, and maybe
it's a concern about himself and his position because
his dad's going to come to him,
right? And that would be the question, Reuben. So not only have you slept with one of my wives, now you've let the little brother get sold to Egypt or killed. And so Reuben's very concerned, and you see this later on, right? And what we will see happens here is in one of the wonderful unfoldings of the story is Reuben is not a natural leader, but Judah is.
Mm-hmm.
Because they will listen to Judah when Judah says, "Why don't we sell the kid?" And then later on, you'll notice that whenever it happens that this is what happens later on, whenever they're going back to Egypt, right? I think Reuben initially tries to take the leadership position again and says, "Hey, Dad, you know, let Benjamin go with me." And I think Dad's hesitant, but then Judah steps forward and says, "Listen, I'll take care of him. And if anything happens, you can take it from, like, I will be responsible for him."
Yeah,
see Judah stepping forward, even in unrighteousness, but he's a leader.
Yeah, Judah saves his life. Reuben didn't save his life because it seems like in the plan, Reuben didn't tell them he was going to come back and get him. So
he didn't tell them that.
So death was still the main thought.
Well, he says he wanted to rescue him. That's what
Reuben did, but when he's talking to his brothers, instead of like us stabbing him and killing him, let's just throw him in a pit, and then he'll die in there, right? I mean, to me, that's how that conversation would have went. Now, Reuben in his mind is thinking, later when they leave, I'm going to come get him and save him. But to all the brothers, it's like, okay, yeah, which again is even worse. Like I had mentioned, instead of just killing him real quick, throw him in a pit and let him suffer for weeks or whatever it might be until he dies.
But you don't think that Judah was actually trying to save his brother from death? It sounds like he was more motivated just by personal gain.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think 20 shekels is a lot of money. It didn't sound like from what I don't know the comparison. I'm sure it's there and somebody.
And then he didn't even get 20. He only got two.
Right.
If they split it,
yeah, they would have got two.
Well, Reuben would have to get half.
Reuben should get 10. Yeah. And then the rest of them could split the rest.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And we find out the kind of things that Judah spends money on in the next chapter. So, I mean, it further shows that this story is not simply about Joseph, but it's not only about the story that God is working out through Joseph, but it's the transformation he's working in Judah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a sad situation that we see here. Family fighting, even to the point of murder, to the point of, just let's sell them into slavery. Let's just be rid. And then knowing it's going to break their father's heart, but we don't care about that. You know,
they're so hurt and blinded by their hatred that they're willing to do whatever it takes in their minds to deal with it. Another component of this important to consider is the fact that this was the church.
Yeah.
And so whenever they say brothers, it's fascinating, right? Paul calls the church brothers and sisters. So, not only is there rivalries within individual families, but there's rivalries within each church family. And this kind of stuff happens. This is the people of God, and they're willing to do horrible things to each other in the people of God. You see all of the hard-heartedness of all of these guys with all their... We see Reuben, right? His motivations. Judah, his motivations. We've already seen what kind of people Levi and Simeon are. And now we see Joseph, who's being persecuted and cast out. We see Jacob, the old man, who's going to be hurt. And so this is a picture also of, I mean, this is a picture of what the people of God have to deal with, but also of how God's grace works even through the mess of our churches, a First Corinthians church or a church like that, what we even mean for evil, God means for good, even within church life in many ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so through this, obviously, and this will be the case as we continue on with Joseph, we see the hand of God moving, even in the midst of people making free will decisions. That last verse in the chapter is an important verse in verse 36, where it says, "Meanwhile, while all this is going on, while Jacob is crying and mourning and everything is happening, the Midianites sold Joseph to Potiphar." Which is a part of God's plan, because again, we get to read the whole story, so we know what happens and what takes place. And so, what the brothers decide, so Jacob decides to send Joseph. Joseph decides to obey his dad. Joseph just happens to run into a guy in Shechem who knows where his brothers have gone, right? And so he says, hey, go on over there. Joseph goes, he finds his brothers. His brothers freely decide to kill him. Reuben freely decides to say, hey, let's just throw him in a pit. Judah decides to freely sell him to the people who just happen to be coming down the road willing to buy somebody, right? And then the Midianites, who are not the people of God at all here, decide to sell him to Potiphar, right? They're making a buck off of Joseph, I'm sure. I'm sure they sold him for more than 20 shekels so that they could make some money here. And in all of this, God's plan is unfolding perfectly, unbeknownst to the family, so that God could save them through Joseph in about 20 years. It's going to be about 20 years down the road when this happens and this takes place. Mm-hmm. And we just see that awesome plan of God happening in ways that we would never pick, in ways that we would never choose, right? But we see God's grace to this horrible family. Like, if you're looking, if God looked into the future, like some people I think would say, which I don't disagree with, and say, let me see the decisions, why would this be the one that's allowed to go? Why would you save this family? You know, you'd be like, no, Jacob, pass. You know, Reuben, pass. Judah, pass.
Levi, Simeon, pass.
Yeah, pass, pass. You'd be like, none of these people deserve to be saved. We'll just let them die in the famine. I'll move on to something else. But that's not... that's not how it happens. And what I tried to point out really was two things. Number one, we have to understand that in our heart and in the hearts of our families is the same sin that lies in the heart of this family. You know, we don't want to think of ourselves as murderers or schemers, but we are. In our hearts, it's there. And a lot of us have real life stories that we could say, in my family are adulterers, in my family are liars, in my family are cheats, thieves, murders. We know this. And it's embarrassing. We don't like to talk about it. We try to make things all look okay. But it's just the truth of the matter. And so when we sit there and feel like, gosh, that's so embarrassing, we look at a story like this and we see, but yet in the midst of all this embarrassing sin of the family and in of me, here God works. God uses Jacob. God uses Joseph. God uses Judah, right? God uses Levi and his family. God uses all these people's families for his purpose. And then if you keep going down the line, as I mentioned Sunday, to save us, to save me, like my story. If God didn't plan all this out, Tim couldn't be a Christian, right? If Joseph wasn't sold to Potiphar, Tim couldn't be a Christian because this was God's plan, and it's working out exactly how God wanted it to. So it brings, hopefully, hope to families as they sit and listen, hope to individuals as they sit and listen to this story to say, this is what God does. And so, Scott, you...
Yeah, I was going to say, Judah's decision to sell him and keep Joseph alive, little did he know, was actually going to be used by God's ultimate decision to send Joseph to keep Judah alive.
Yeah, that's what, you know, I mean. What I mean? Yeah, like,
because that's what we're told.
It is ironic. Yeah. They want to kill him,
right?
But their decision to kill him actually saves them down the road, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean,
and the Lord's providence, yeah, because it says in Psalm 105, when he summoned a famine on the land and broke all supply of bread, he, God, had sent a man ahead of them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave.
Yeah, and so it's really a beautiful picture of God's work and his providence in the world, which should give us some comfort and some hope,
yeah,
I think, as well.
Yeah, I think something that you did, that you helped us do as you were preaching, to see ourselves in this story in the different parts that there are. I mean, obviously, we need to see ourselves primarily as the brothers. We're the ones who are the sinners in need of salvation. But I think you did a good job pointing out also that we can sympathize maybe with, or see that the scriptures sympathize with those in our congregation who are hurting the way that Jacob was hurting, in the sense of like, I'm going to die sad. Like, I'm never going to get over this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, because we know, like you referenced this actually in your Sunday evening sermon, like we know all kinds of things that are going on, you know, in the church that other people don't know, you know, pain and hurt and loss and suffering, you know, people quietly hurting, you know, and just questioning, like, is this ever going to get better? You know, I just think that was a really good pastoral note that you made that was really helpful for people to see, like, God does understand, you know, maybe even a little bit to see that, you know, that I'm not the only one who suffered like this. You know, I just think that was a really good note that you made there.
Yeah, and it's really hard to minister to people going through that. And I know our church family tries to minister to each other, and I'm sure a lot of people think, what do I say? You know, what do I say to someone who's going through this? Or they've been going through this for 7 or 8 years now. And it is hard, but you do remind them of the goodness of God and the goodness of God centered in on Jesus Christ and what he has done for us and forgiving us of our sin. And that's why it's really good to have a proper understanding of sin.
Mm-hmm.
And but then also of redemption and of atonement.
And I think also like the whole point of the narrative of Joseph, like where it's all going to culminate, to see that there is a God who's in control, and I can take comfort in that, even if I don't understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And even if that doesn't necessarily help me feel better right now. You know?
Yeah, and a lot of times when you minister to somebody like that, it's not a bunch of scripture verses you throw at them. I think a lot of times you just have to listen to them.
Yeah.
and mourn with them, and know that you're there for, you know, so that they know that you're there for them, because that's all you could have done for Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
You know, has just been there for him in any way. There was no way to bring Joseph back.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm sorry, he's dead. He's gone.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
the brothers seem to learn that later on,
right?
Whenever they don't want this to happen again,
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm,
the tables are turned.
Right.
They're willing to sacrifice themselves so that this doesn't happen to their father mm-hmm again, because they know there's not going to be anything that they can say to make it better.
Right, mm-hmm, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just a good point. Nina made a very good point with that, I think.
It wasn't as good as my sermon, but...
No, you're right. I agree.
But you're getting there.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. One day.
Hey, keep going. Hey, keep working at it.
The name of that pizza place is Anson's.
Never heard of it.
It's in Carlton.
Yeah, Carlton's like a foreign world to me. Might as well be China.
Yeah. 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 So, but that's what it is.
Anson's.
I know everybody was waiting to hear about it.
The weirdest pizza I think I liked was from Vito's, which isn't there anymore, and it's now Pope's. Do you know where that is? On Telegraph Road?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if they still do this, but they had a... Tony Paco's pizza.
Oh no.
So it had their chili on top.
No.
And it had,
did they have hot dogs?
Mustard, and it had some of their sausages on it, and then some of their sweet hot pickles that are really good came with it too.
That sounds so messy, but so really good.
It's so good.
You have to eat that with a fork.
I still have not been to Tony Paco's.
You know, I haven't either.
You've never been?
Never been to Tony Paco's.
Is that an actual restaurant?
Yeah, it's in Toledo. It's like very famous.
Dog, yeah, super famous.
Oh, yes, I've heard about that.
Because
isn't that right by one of the baseball stadiums?
There's one of them there, yeah. There's a few. There's like one by on Secor Road now, but the main one is, people are going to be mad at me because I don't really know. It's over by like the water and the bridge and 280 over there somewhere, I think.
Okay. Yeah, because what's his name? Jamie Farr. I think he talked about Tony Paco's, and because he's from Toledo, right? Mm-hmm. So
it's good.
Yeah,
it's good. It'll be a competitor.
You've never been there.
I've had their chili though, and their hot dogs, and
in can or straight.
They
from
used
it.
To have a. They used to have a restaurant in the Andersons, which was over by Olive Garden on Talmadge Road and Monroe Street. That used to be a store called the Andersons. It was real big. And in there they had a thing. And I might have had that once.
We just need to drive down there one day.
They have like chicken paprikash, Hungarian food, but then they have hot dogs. Chicken paprikash.
It's like a soup.
It's like
stew.
It's like a dumpling, like a small dumpling with paprika and chicken. It's Hungarian food.
It's good.
Yeah. It is. Their pickles are real good. Their sweet hot pickles are really good. And you can get them at Highlight and stuff. You can get them anywhere probably.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
dope. Yeah. Yeah. We need to make that happen.
Yeah. Be happy to do it. All right. Well, thank you for listening today. Hopefully this was helpful in some way, shape, or form. We're going to continue in the story of Joseph. Can't tell you exactly what we'll be doing yet because I'm not quite prepared. I'm going to try to do chapters if I can, probably.
Chapter 38.
I don't know if I'm going to do 38.
You don't think so?
No, we got to skip it.
I think I'm going to skip it.
Are you serious? It's one of my favorite stories. I'm serious.
It doesn't have to do with Joseph. I'm doing the life of Joseph.
But
it has to do with his brother.
All right, just so everybody knows, when we turn this off, we're probably going to talk for like an hour.
Oh,
about
my
that.
Word. It doesn't have to do with the life of Joseph. Judah is going to show back up.
Yeah,
he's
later.
The one. This is...
Okay. I'll reference it maybe then.
You can hear the distress in Spencer's voice. We're going to talk about this, I promise.
Okay.
I'm doing the life of Joseph.
This is Jesus right here.
I'm doing the life of Joseph.
Judah and Tamar. This is Jesus right here. This
if
is like
you were
gold.
Doing,
this is like here.
If you, were,
you
if
talk
you
about softball
story,
passages. This is a softball
if
passage.
If you were doing a story of Albert Pujols, would you talk about Justin Verlander?
I would.
Would you spend a whole segment on Justin Verlander? No, you wouldn't.
I would spend time talking about Tony La Russa.
But not Justin Verlander?
Justin Verlander didn't play with Albert Pujols.
But he's a part of the story. He pitched to him.
Okay.
World Series.
But that's not the... I would talk about Tony La Russa.
A little bit. You wouldn't have a whole time on Tony La Russa.
We don't spend the whole time.
Guys,
we
this would be a whole
guys,
time.
There's
guys,
one chapter.
We shouldn't talk about any of those people in church, okay?
There's one chapter. Tony La Russa.
We shouldn't talk about him in church.
He's Italian.
Yeah.
What does it have to do with anything?
Does he still? He's not in.
No, he was. Yeah, fairly recently.
Yeah, with the stinking White Sox, old, wasn't he?
Yeah, I don't know why he was doing
anyway,
that.
Anyway, all right. Sorry. Sidetrack.
All right.
We got sidetracked.
No, anyway, very entertaining.
All right. If Tim doesn't preach Genesis 38,
I'm waiting to hear what you're going to say.
I don't know. I might do a one-off sometime somewhere or in the parking lot. Yeah.
Yeah, all what right. are you going to do? What are you
going to do? His name was called Paris.
Are you going to read it right now? Anyways. All right. Well, we really do hope that we
do
see
Do I really need to read
Sunday?
The Matthew's genealogy?
Matthew's?
Right. Yeah, the genealogy.
No, we know Jesus came from Judah.
And Tamar, this story.
But I'm doing...
This incident
is talking about Joseph right now.
Jesus came right from this story.
I guess I should go all the way back to Adam then. We just work our way all the way through. Right. We'll
just preach the scriptures. You'll get there eventually.
I remember one time, though, a side note. I was preaching through this passage one time, and there was an old guy that was an ex-pastor who he had retired. And he told me, he's like, I told him what I was going to preach. I said 38. He's like, oh, you're not skipping anything, are you? Because he probably would have wanted, it's not a very flavor. This one in chapter 19 with Lot and his daughters are not passages that a lot of people would be comfortable talking about. Anyway, so something to think about.
Yeah, okay, I'll think about it. All right, like I said, I hope we see you this coming Sunday, Lord willing. But until then, we hope that you have a great week. God bless.